So this reading is taken from the Sermon on the Mount, which is mostly of Jesus' teachings on how to live. They're all in there, one way or another. He's speaking not only to his people, the disciples, but the crowds. So who were all these people who thronged to hear? We kind of have a feeling that it wasn't the people who were doing very nicely, thank you. It wasn't the people who were settled in the hierarchy, the comfortable, possibly even the smug. Why on earth would they trail after an itinerant miracle worker and teacher for hours or for days? What would they have to gain? Because these were not the people who needed to keep their noses clean to get their next promotion. The people who tipped up were the people whose absence wouldn't matter, who wouldn't be noticed. They didn't have much, and so they didn't have much to lose in terms of preferment either. Now, earlier in the Sermon on the Mount, he has already told these people that the ones who have nothing, the ones who are humble, who are bereaved, these people are blessed, he has said. They are happy, he has said. That might wake us up a bit. It's not the sort of thing you'd say or think today, is it? We don't think you're blessed if you're poor or grief-stricken, let alone happy. Because our life experience tells us differently. So we listen to Jesus' words because they are so odd. We want them to speak to us, even though we don't want to be going through hard and difficult times. But those times come to us whether we want them or not. We can't escape them, and in lots of ways they make us real. Even if, using the phrase of a great friend of mine who has now died, even if you're nicely placed, you're not immune to sickness or bereavement. So the Sermon on the Mount is for all of us, because we are all poor in some way, whether we like to admit it or not. So we are all blessed. We are all straining to hear Jesus' next words. He is speaking to people who perhaps don't know where their next meal is coming from, where they will sleep tonight. He is telling these people not to worry. Not to worry. Can you imagine it? They may be hungry for something deeper, something more, because they trust Jesus and his teachings. They don't ridicule him. They don't attack him. They don't walk away. They listen. Can you imagine someone you don't trust saying, just don't worry? But Jesus really didn't know where he would sleep, or who would feed him, or what he might eat, any more than his people did. So they could trust him, and they did. I want to bring us slightly more up to date, just for a moment. Because the present will speak into the past and vice versa. Has anybody seen the film The Bridge of Spies? Please. Brilliant. Excellent. So there's a quick plot synopsis for you, I'm afraid. During the Cold War, a Russian spy, played by Mark Rylance, has been caught. He is on trial. He is defended by his lawyer, Tom Hanks. Well, you'd want Tom Hanks as your lawyer. They go through a series of ordeals as negotiations proceed to exchange him in a very complicated swap, which involves, to my from memory, at least three countries. At increasingly sticky points in the film, the lawyer is concerned because the spy seems entirely unconcerned, not bothered, when his well-being, his very life, are in the balance. They are at stake. The lawyer asks, aren't you worried? Rylance leaves a pause. always a pause. Why? He responds. Why? Would it help? Another silence. Because no, it wouldn't help. But it's what we do. Aren't you worried? Why? Would it help? Perhaps one of the reasons Jesus tells us not to worry is because worry is disabling. What happens when we worry? We can't think straight or widely. We have tunnel vision. We don't give ourselves choices. Choices which have always been present. We don't see them. We are blind to them if we can't leave our worry and step back. Just think for a moment about our first reading, which has God handing over to us, responsibility for looking after creation. If we are worrying about profit and resources and the bottom line and the shareholders and all the rest of it, how can we step back enough to ponder the consequences for the interwoven nature of creation, of ecosystems, of interrelationships, of species, and the future of the planet? So we come to the lilies of the field. They are beautiful. Sure, the flowers don't last forever. But they can change our lives just by being lovely. We easily forget, too easily perhaps, that there is power and blessing in just being present, attentive to something that's really beautiful. Perhaps particularly in nature. It changes us. It resets us. We take a space. A pause. We breathe deeply. We gain a new perspective. Sometimes by just intentionally disengaging from an ongoing stress and engaging with something beautiful, something natural, we find in ourselves a deeper ability to be human. Our thoughts, our hearts, and our breathing slow. And we are back in our skin. We take a deep breath. Possible courses of action occur to us, which were not evident in our anxiety, our panic even. We find ourselves able to be wise. Our course of action becomes obvious. We know that it may be costly, but we are okay with that. But we have to do that consciously, because our instinct, our reflex, if you like, is to worry, to be anxious. Aren't you worried? Why? Would it help? Jesus teaches us this as a way to righteousness. It's the path he walked, faithfully and lovingly. How on earth could he have taken the decisions and walked the walk which took him to the cross without knowing that worry gets in the way of love? Love for the Father and love for us, his people. That doesn't mean he didn't suffer. It does mean that he could say and do what was needed. We are here today to witness to that. and to try to do and say whatever God needs from us. We are able to walk faithfully in his footsteps because he first showed us why and how we can do so. And worry is not part of the plan. Amen.